The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
He used to do it when I was in bed and everyone was asleep. He would crawl in and I used to lay there. He made a black eye on me and punched my eye so bad one time. Wherever I went, I had no escape. There was no safety anywhere.
Welcome to Stand Up Speak Up, a Canadian-made podcast highlighting important social issues and giving a voice to remarkable people. Looking at today's guest, you'd never say she has five kids from four different fathers, or that she was abused as a child. To remain anonymous, she goes by Rose or Rosie. Rose is an artist with designs in the Stand Up Speak Up apparel store. Growing up, Rose faced physical, mental, and sexual abuse. She had nowhere to turn and was failed by everybody who should have helped her. Although Rose has a design in our store, we didn't know much about her until recently, and after learning about her story, Carla knew it needed to be shared on the podcast. Rose's mother suffered from mental health issues and was around 18 years old when she gave birth. From there, Rose and her brother were in for a terribly sad, cruel, and abusive childhood.
You and your brother would be locked in a room for days, weeks, and they would give you some basic food, but sometimes you guys would be starving, you'd be freezing. There was no access to a bathroom. It was just a bucket. So what kind of world did your brother and you have to create? And how old were you when you first started to get locked away?
We were quite young. We was locked away for pretty much a lot, but it would be when my stepdad came on the scene. So it was very young. When things started to happen and that we were being more isolated into the bedrooms or stood in a corner or, you know, and that we were so much, locked away.
Did you having to be kind of locked away go on for years, and were you only let out to go to school?
No, it was the authorities knew us, obviously, like the doctors, the dentists and the school. Obviously, we're the places you have to attend, you know, because we're registered, aren't we? We have to attend there. But it was all very much unknown to the outside world, you know, like people in the streets or, you know, they didn't know what was going on behind closed doors. So I suppose that people at the school, for instance, would assume that we were normal, but actually it was very, very different.
Were you dressed in normal clothes, or were you given more thrift type clothes? How were you dressed?
Oh, we were dressed all what I would deem to be absolutely awful clothes. But, you know, I have to understand that things were very hard back in the day there, especially if she was a young mum herself and struggling financially. So I can kind of understand it. But, we were dressed in like school clothes and normal raggy clothes, really. And we weren't dressed in like pretty clothes. I wouldn't say.
And were you, did you bring lunch money to school, or did you bring, like, what would your lunch consist of?
Oh, God. We did have school, free school dinners, but there was, I think there must have been a period where, you know, that money would have stopped. So we would have gotten school dinners for a little while. And, oh, the school dinners, what was packed was Marmite sandwiches in a bread bag. And I absolutely hate Marmite, and she knew that. They both knew we both hated Marmite. So we would actually feed the bread or the sandwiches to the birds and not actually eat anything at school. But because they'd packed up sandwiches, you see, so it looked to everybody else like they were feeding us. But they knew we used to hate Marmite, so they'd do it on purpose. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes, yes.
She used to throw it away and not have anything to eat.
And when you were living in that bedroom with your brother for all those years, that room, was there physical abuse as well? I mean, would your mom come in and physically abuse you?
Yeah. very, very much so. He would, as well as a stepdad, he was coming into it. He made a black eye on me and punched my eye so bad one time. She would come in and she'd smack me across my face so hard it knocked tooth out flying across the room. They would throw drawers. They would just poke. There was one time I'd scratched. Well, where we'd have to lay in bed all day, like at weekends or summertime or what have you, I used to scratch in the ducts that were on this wall. And obviously it would then peel off. And I was called upstairs one time from eating my dinner. And I just knew something was... Oh, I was like, what's going to happen now? And I was a bit dubious and cautious about going up the stairs, you know, and my brother crossed and he like looked at me and I looked at him. And I called into the room. I was like, what's that? And told off because I was scratching in the wall and scratched off a duck. And I was actually put over her knee. And she'd had a moccasin slip at it, you know, the base of those very hard. And she had smacked me across my backside so many times with this moccasin slipper that my actual backside had turned black and blue and I could not physically sit down for a week on it. I couldn't sit down. It was so painful.
How old would you have been at that?
Very hard to put an age to it, but on a guesstimate level, it was probably been about 6 or 7 years old.
And what did your brother do when he's seeing your mother act crazy?
There is nothing that you can do when you're young. You can only hear it and block it.
Yeah.
And cry, probably, you know, you feel sorry, but you're helpless. You can't do anything when you're small. You know, you just have to...
Did you find out different ways that would have her stop? I mean, if you cried, would she stop? If you were silent?
No, it got worse. If you cried louder, that's why when I was crying and really trying to hold my hands against my backside to smack it, that's why I was just like, no, move your hands. And then I got more and more and more and screaming, absolutely screaming. And the neighbours would have heard things, but I think the neighbours wouldn't have gotten involved. In the day of those, not to cause any animosity. And we did have a little old lady, I remember a little old lady, and her name was called Nanny Leslie, we all called her. And, you know, there were times when I'd be crying because she'd daddy smacked me across the ear, or, you know, it's been horrible. And kids crying is an expression. You could stand outside in the snow and be like, stand out there in your nighty until you've stopped your crying, and I'd be so cold. And I just wanted someone to hear me, so I'd scream louder. And this old lady would come out with warm potatoes that she was roasting. She'd be like, come over here and just grab a potato. And she used to watch from her window, and I suppose because she was elderly, she felt that the only way she could help was by, like, you know, just coming out and giving me comfort with her lovely warm part-baked potatoes, you know. So it's kind of like, it's so difficult, isn't it, when people do get involved with things like that, because it can cause, I suppose, that they didn't want to get wrapped up in drama. So
if another adult got involved, do you feel like your mom and stepfather would have gone after that person, would have?
There were adults that actually used to get involved in the abuse. We grew up on more dragged up on a council estate where everybody seemed to be the same in my eyes. You know, there were adults that had, remember this woman, and she had a disabled child in a wheelchair, and my mother was friendly with this lady and used to take us over there. And this woman had strapped my brother down in a chair and was force-feeding him this food, which was liquidized baby food type stuff. It wasn't like it didn't smell nice. And force-feeding this down the back of his throat while my mother held his hand down and his head back. And that's the kind of behaviours that we was exposed to from not just our parents, but it seems that everywhere we went, there was this kind of behaviour from everybody. So if they weren't participating in it, it was like they were fearful to do anything about it because there were so many people. So I don't know, that's just how I viewed it from being younger, and that I guess that's why nobody would have got involved if there's so many people there to gang up, you know.
And well, would your stepfather have friends come over that would also be involved in the abuse? I mean, did they have friends that were sadists like they were? I mean, people that like to inflict pain?
I just remember this one woman in particular, this friend. I don't really know, if I'm completely honest with you. I know that even growing up into like a teenager, you know, my mum seemed to have friended males that were they were abusive in secret. So I was actually abused, not sexually, just by my stepdad, but I was abused sexually by other males who were friends of the family, so to speak.
And did anyone know? Did your stepfather?
No, I didn't say anything. No, I didn't say anything to anybody whatsoever.
Your stepfather also abused you, though. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And do you think that he knew that other family members or friends of his were also abusing you?
No. No, they weren't friends of his as such. They're more friends of like my mother's. So she made a friend at work, for instance, and who I became friends with his daughter. And so I used to go around and see his daughter in the way of escape when I started growing into, you know, a bit of more of a, just before getting into teenage, before I went into care. And I can't quite remember how old this would have been, probably about 9, maybe 10. And this man then started to abuse me, so I feel that she was unaware of it, and I was unaware. I couldn't sense that type of thing off of him until these things happened, but I never knew where to go, because it was like everywhere that I went. When I went to school, I was highly bullied, I was spat at, I was called names. When I went around friends, you know, the dad used to abuse me, and it was like wherever I went, I had no escape. There was no safety anywhere. So it was kind of like, what do I do with this?
Were you scared to tell your brother because it might upset him too much?
Yeah, my brother, I felt took on enough. And I used to think that, you know, if I said anything to my brother, he would probably try and persuade me to tell other people. And my fear was that, I don't know what the fear was, but I suppose, you know, that it would probably traumatise my brother. For one thing, you know, because he would feel like, oh my fucking God, and then, you know, he could go and try and beat somebody up, you know, when he got into his male years, or they go to the police, and then, you know, my fear was, I suppose, not being believed. I don't know what the hugest fear, I have no idea what the biggest fear was, and I suppose it's because they're males, and they had control, and that at any point, you know, they're stronger, I deemed them to be stronger, and anything could happen. I don't know what it was. It's so strange.
With your stepdad, so how old were you when he started to sexually abuse you?
I was very, very young. And I believe that the age is around about 3 years old. I was very, very young. Very, very, very
and
young.
How did he do it without your brother or your mother or other people seeing this happen?
He used to do it when I was in bed and everyone was asleep. He would crawl in and, and I used to lay there. At night, you know, the cracks in the doors and the hallway light, and I see the shadow and I pretend I was asleep.
And would your brother know he had gone into your room? And
no, I don't think so, no. But it was all very, and there would be things like he would say, oh, I've got to go and do some decorating, I'll take her with me. And I used to fucking dread it. I used to dread it. Excuse me, that the house he would be going to decorate and would be empty, then people wouldn't be in there, so he could abuse and do anything. You know, Anne would take, who's my mother, sorry, she would say, go out shopping on a Saturday morning. And he'd say, I'll take all the kids with you. And then he would obviously do things then when she wasn't there. I'm surprised to be fair.
What do you think she would
have got caught up?
What do you think she would have done if she found out?
I know what she thinks of it now, and she's very, very... It's hard to say what she'd have done in person here. I think at one time I was going to actually blurt it out, and then something said, don't fucking dare, just hold it in, because it just caused riots. But I think that she would have suggested possibly that I was making it up.
Yeah.
And so, I don't think that she would have believed me.
He's your kind of just hanging out, and you're like his kind of his daughter, not his daughter, but whatever. And the abuse is happening, yeah. And you're just having to pretend like nothing, none of it's happening, or just.
Yeah, but I think that there was no signs or signals anyway, because, I lived in silence. I didn't say hello, goodbye, nothing. So there was no signs that they would be looking for, because, that with being abused in all different ways, you kind of shut off anyway, don't you?
Yeah.
When I was younger, I had to just think of the story, the fairy tale, when things were happening. I just used to think of something in my head.
Everybody that should have been helping you was abusing you.
Yeah. Even social services, I had no confidence with them at all either. I mean, they were called up on a number of occasions by a school who had raised concerns about black eyes, and they'd actually stripped me in front of the office, stripped me completely naked in front of my headmaster and the teachers, and found all these bruises, and I told them where I got the black eye from, and they then took me home, and I think I've explained this in the other interview, that actually at the end of that, when I was put in front of my parents, and they said, so what happened? And you think, oh my fucking God, they've just put me in front of these people. I'm scared, I'm worried. And they were like, did he do the black eye? And I'm thinking, you have got no fucking idea that now if I admit to this, what is going to happen when you leave? So I then had to lie. And at the same time, you're kind of like looking at them with those eyes as though to say, it's not fucking true, help me. They just left. They left it, got out and left, didn't come back. So I had absolutely no faith in teachers, social support. I had no faith that anybody would ever save us.
I mean, I hope that teachers are a lot more educated now.
But the thing is, I hope so.
But it wasn't that long ago. Like, when you're talking and you're telling your story, it's so easy for me to think it was 50 years ago this happened. This wasn't that long ago.
No, it's actually, I was out of the care system when I was 16, and even still then I was being abused. Even when I left care, I was still being abused sexually. So it wasn't until actually I made the break and got out of the town through drinking. Actually, I did turn to drink, and I have at times turned to drugs as well. I have had that, going around and actually sleeping with other men, because where I was abused.
It would be a miracle if you didn't turn to drinking and drugs. I mean, that would be a miracle, because I don't know how anybody could deal, like, even make sense of that in a rational brain.
It's that's exactly how the world has been. And like I said, the only person I ever trusted, and I didn't even want to tell my brother, I didn't ever tell him the extent of how things went. But I didn't want to tell him. I couldn't, because I think that he would have, I think it would have traumatized his mind.
And with your friend's father, do you think he also abused his own daughter?
I've got no idea. You don't know in those. I maybe not his own daughter. Possibly other children, other girls. I've got no idea, and I don't want to say. But I feel that these people sense the vulnerability. They're aware of the family situation, and they sense that vulnerability, and they just know how to lure a young person in and bribe them and get them scared. And that's how things were. And because you are scared and you're thinking, fucking hell, if I say anything, they get into your mind. For someone who hasn't been through it, they think it was the easiest thing to do, just go and tell the police. No, actually, it's not.
Even
in my older years, when they've said, go and tell the police, and I've been, fuck that, no. No, I'm not going to go and tell the police. not just for myself, but also for my other siblings, because, you know, the man that abused me, you know, the stepdad, he abused me. He's got five of his own children who were my siblings. Not, we weren't all sort of overly close.
Did he abuse his own kids?
No, I don't believe that. No.
Did they see the abuse going on? Did they see how you were treated Mm-mm. in the house?
They saw that they were very young. So a lot of them don't have that memory. But my little sister, I had a little sister, I think she must have been about two or three when all this stuff was going on. But I used to ask her to come, she used to come up the stairs and I used to say, go down in the bins and get me some food, because we were hungry. And she can't remember doing any of that. So we'd go, you know, I'd have to go and try and get my little sister to go and get some food out of the bin for me to eat. I'd go, get me some food. And she'd sneak down, you know. She used to always come upstairs and come and sit in the bedroom and have a talk. But then as soon as she was found in there, I'd get out. And then she was sent downstairs. You know,
did you dream of Prince Charming coming? I mean, did you read fairy tales and think, like, if only a man could come and take me away from all this? And
yes, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. If we didn't put our minds, and I say we, because it was my brother who filled my imagination. He had the most fantastic imagination ever. And I grew up with that imagination as well, in thinking, right, I'm gonna, there's a prince, a Cinderella story. It's exactly how I would describe my fairy tale, a Cinderella story. Or Rapunzel locked in a tower. You know, that's exactly it. And you dream of this man coming along on a white horse and he saves you and you put your hair down and then, you know, climbs up. And I used to imagine all of those. And there was one time, and I've actually written a piece about this, looking out of a window. We used to live opposite Pleasure Beach and I used to look out of this little window and I used to see the seagulls flying above. And this is the time I prayed, actually, and I was speaking with God in my mind, because, you know, the only thing you can do to keep sanity. And I said, please get me out of here. I wish I was as free as that bird, what it would be like just to fly and be free. And I used to think things about what if I was a bird, what would I do, where would I go? You know, you have to put your mind into that place, because if you didn't, you would go completely mad. So thank God for fairy tales, is what I say. Absolutely thank God for fairy tales. And they do, actually, when I watch fairy tales and I watch things like Rapunzel, they do bring a lot back. They do. And I think that is how I lived, like a fairy tale, only the ending is still as yet to come. But, you know, it's a fairy tale. You know, the wicked stepdad and the wicked mum and being locked away and, you know, made to do all these different things like scrub our clothes. You know, we had to wash our clothes. Me and my brother, we had to scrub our clothes with a bar of soap while everyone else was going through the washing machine. We would have to stand and wash our clothes with our bare hands in a bathroom sink with a bar of soap. Then we'd have to hang them out and dry them and bring them back in. You know, we had to make our own dinners. We didn't know how to use a cooker. We had to have bread and butter. That's the only thing we could do. Bread and butter. We weren't allowed cereals. We weren't allowed milk. We wasn't allowed any squash. It was just water, if we was allowed that at all. And I remember doing things like where we was denied water, sitting in a cup and building up that spit, so that when there was a day that I was really thirsty, I could drink my spit rather than my piss. That was like the predicament, you know, sometimes we ended up in. And actually they found it one time under my bed and called me a filthy cow for saving up this spit in a cup. And then they made me drink it. And it's like 3 weeks old. They made me drink that saliva back down my mouth. It was the most vile thing ever.
They have like an evil sickness to them. I mean, that's evil. What they're doing is pure evil, like the stepmother in Cinderella and the witch in Hansel and Gretel. And I can't even imagine trying to even understand how that could give them pleasure. And it must have given them pleasure.
Mm-hmm. That's what it felt like.
Was your mom jealous of you? I mean, was your mom also quite beautiful? I mean, was she jealous of your looks? And
I don't know, but she cut my hair off when I was at school. Because it was lovely. It's long and it was lovely at one point. And just as I was going into middle school, she cut all my hair like a boy. So that's why I was bullied a lot. And I think she was aware of that, and she didn't want me getting any kind of attention, maybe. And so she cut my hair off, bright short, like a boy, dressed me in rags. And she'd done it again when my hair grew longer again. It was lovely, and I used to put it up nicely, and I was so grateful to have long hair. And because I had then gone to a friend and confided yet again in this friend, and they'd called up social services, and yet again the same thing happened. They walked away. Because I'd gone out and opened up my mouth and told somebody, off came my hair again. She just cut it all off, worse. And she said, I'm going to cut your hair. You know, you went and told these people, I'm going to cut your hair, and she cut my hair again. So I think that there was, I don't know whether she was jealous or whether she was just so deeply disturbed that she wanted to give somebody or try and inflict pain that she had when she was younger onto us.
At the age of 11, Rose was thrown out by her mother. For the next 5 years, she'd spend time in multiple foster homes, moving around as some were only temporary or others were abusive. At the age of 16, she was free from foster care but was no better off and had nowhere safe or clean to live. She had also begun seeking the love and attention she craved from men.
When you became of age and turned into a woman, were you really even more scared? Did you like, oh, now I'm going to even be more like a woman? And did you try to hide under your clothes? Like, how did you embrace your womanhood?
No, I actually, I used to cover up. I never wore short skirts or anything actually until I was about 27 years old. I think I went out in a short skirt, which was just above my knee. I never exposed myself. So I'd wear jeans. I'd actually be what I'd call like a tomboy kind of look or a raggy look, you know, because I didn't want people looking at me. So I used to dress up quite.
Did boys give you extra attention in high school? Did they find you
no,
pretty?
No, they hated me. I was bullied. No, I was very bullied. Extremely bullied.
You said before that you had gone through years of being promiscuous, which is very common when people have been abused. The other...
Yeah.
Usually become one extreme or the other. So where would you meet these men?
I was actually drinking down the pubs underage. And because my stepdad would come in and abuse me, or, you know, I've been abused, I would go down a pub and I would just drink. And I would drink myself so stupid to take anybody home just to get him off me. So I didn't care who it was. I didn't care what the fuck they looked like. I'd drunken so much, I'd gone past caring.
And when you brought them home, what did your mom and stepdad and your brother say?
I used to do it, you know, because I was underage and I was actually in foster care some of these times. So I would actually be, sometimes I'd even go to like public toilets or just do it on a beach or, you know, I was very degraded by doing what I degraded myself. But in the thinking that I would feel more upgraded by the degrade that I had from my stepfather. I know it's all completely fucked in the head, but that's just how it was with myself.
It doesn't sound that messed up, to be honest. I mean, like, that is so much, I don't know, so much emotion there that you just had sex with other guys to push the emotions down. Like, you just, it was a survival technique, right? I mean, it's not...
Yeah.
I mean, you're just really resilient. You're thinking, because was that the negative and the shame so overwhelming that you just needed something?
Just a quick interjection. I'm Zach Tolstoy, one of the founders of Stand Up Speak Up. Our podcast is just one part of the Stand Up Speak Up brand. We are supported by an online store of the same name where we sell a variety of artisan products. We have an ongoing blog series with over a dozen contributors, and we offer a series of interactive workshops. Throughout the different iterations of Stand Up Speak Up, our core message and purpose have always been the same: to create a site that allows our customers and us more opportunities to speak up about and support causes, organizations, and groups that we're passionate about, and that of course could use additional support. My mother and I have learned about allyship over the years from what feels like 1,001 places and people. We want to encourage members of this fantastic Stand Up Speak Up community to come along and learn with us. So along with our team,
We created this workshop featuring videos, articles, and exercises that have really helped the two of us in our own journey towards allyship. Don't worry, it doesn't cost any money, and you don't need to make an account to access the information. We want to make our workshop as accessible as possible because we believe in our message and understand the importance of spreading awareness. The Ally Workshop is split into 8 parts, including interactive quizzes and helpful videos. It's intended to introduce you to new skills and courses of action in the world of allyship. The workshop is easy to use and can be done entirely on your cell phone, tablet, or computer at your own pace, with each of the 8 sections taking an average of about 15 minutes or so to complete, or a breezy couple hours on a Sunday afternoon.
It's very hard to explain it, but I guess in some respects I was looking for somebody to value my body.
Mm-hmm.
I just went the wrong ways. I went the wrong ways about it, but I felt more valued than being abused, because it was, I put myself into that situation,
okay,
where I felt,
yes,
I was in control of who was touching me. Yeah.
Were some of those men also abusive?
I had relationships, yeah, where they were abusive. Or that they'd had a past I was unaware of, and until further on down the line, you know, the men who are, I see just as like, you know, just the one-nighters, you know, I see them and they go, bye, see you later, no attachments. The relationships, you know, I've kind of been out with somebody who was a severe cocaine addict, and he ended up beating me.
How old were you when you had your first child?
I was 18.
Okay.
Fell pregnant at 17, and at 18.
And yeah, was that someone pregnant. You fell in love with, or?
It wasn't someone who I fell in love with. My first 2 children were with somebody who saved my life unknowingly. I went with him because it was kind of, I wanted to get away from the abuse, from the abuser. And I ended up coming to this town where I'm at now, meeting up with this man, and because he was older than myself as well, and I needed that. I felt I needed to go with the older man to feel protected. And this is where I'm saying that I've gone through situations in my life where I can relate back to my mother and why she would have done things. But I felt protected by this older man, 10 years older than myself. But it was very funny, and you know, he had a few drinking issues himself, but he wasn't abusive. Just more verbally when he was drunk, but he wasn't, you know, he used to look after me really quite well. The only problem was is that I didn't love this man. I purely kind of went with him because I needed saving. And I felt that he could save me, although he didn't know, and he still doesn't know exactly what he saved me from.
Are you still friends with him? I mean, do you still...
Yeah, we did have a dispute because, you know, one day I just woke up and I said to him, I can't be with you, I don't want to be with you anymore. And I just, you know, I up and left. I had to leave the children with him because I didn't have no fixed abode. And we actually went through a 4-year court battle because I wanted my children back. And he, you know, had all the access to all the money, so that left me, and I didn't know any of this at the time, but it left me in a position where I couldn't have my children because I had no fixed abode, I had no money for them, there's nothing anybody could do.
What did you do for a job? Like, did you finish high school or any college?
I wanted to go on to further education, but because obviously I was in the care system and I was then made independent at 16 and I was only living off £40 a week.
How does somebody live off £40 a week? That's impossible, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I had to give up all of my education. I couldn't get into further education because I couldn't afford to get there, as well as run a home and try and clothe myself and everything else. The flat became, or the house that I was in became, it was condemned. It was unfit for human cohabitation, which was why, you know, that was it. Social services threw me out. I didn't care. That was that. No? So I had to kind of make my own way.
From your first husband with the 2 kids, then you met another guy. How did you meet up with him?
I went away to Bournemouth for a few weeks. And it was then supposed to be like a holiday with this gentleman I'm supposed to be, just sort of seeing how it went there. So I call it a relationship, but it wasn't overly a relationship. I found a job at McDonald's, and but he he turned out to be quite abusive. So I then had to leave there. That's where I then went to my children's dad, my older girl's dad. I couldn't get into a job. I just felt I had no qualifications. Nobody would look at me. I couldn't afford to get into a college. I didn't know the ropes of the real world. Everything came at a standstill. And then I became pregnant. And I guess that's kind of where a job would have stepped in. And really, ideally, I wanted to be an actress when I was younger, and I wanted to go to theatre school and be somebody, because I felt acting was a very good way of expressing, and I could act very, very well. But it was all stopped. I couldn't go any further, so I had to also bring up my children.
Did your brother know how bad things got?
When he was in care, we did get separated, and when he was in care, he seemed to get the better deal. So he was with very loving foster carers and stable and in the same home. And no, I don't think he did. And he began to get all the things that he wished for his children, his wife and a career that he wanted, which was to go into the army. And his life started to build up, whereas mine was just like, I was shifted about from home to home to home. I was never loved, had no stability, no family, I didn't have any of that. And I didn't want to put that onto him either, because I was very happy that he was being successful. At the same time, jealous. I'm not going to lie. When he married his wife, I felt very jealous that this woman had come in and now she's become the most important woman of his life. And, there was a high jealousy there, because I felt like someone was taking away the only thing I had. But I don't think he did know to the extent, to be honest, of exactly what was going on as we got older and a bit more distant in that respect.
Stand Up Speak Up will continue in a moment.
How I met Rosie is actually through her artwork. She submitted her artwork for review for our store. And as soon as I saw her art piece, I fell in love with it. And I just wanted to know the story behind it. And when Rosie shared the inspiration behind her art piece, I just knew that we needed to tell her story. Her art piece is called Silent Years, Shed Tears. It's on shirts in our store, and it's really about kind of her journey of facing her fears and facing the demons from her childhood. And it was actually going to be a book cover for her book of poetry, and then decide instead to contribute that to us. And when you look at her art piece, which is also the cover of this podcast, you will really see inside Rosie's heart, which makes it so powerful. The pain of her abuse is reflected right in her artwork, along with her feelings and emotions. And as soon as I saw this art piece, it sent a chill through me. There's just so many emotions. So I really highly recommend, go visit the store, support Rosie with her artwork. Please check out our store, www.standupspeakupapparel. We always put it in the show notes, because without the store, we wouldn't be able to have this amazing podcast. So thank you for all of you that support the store and support the artists that contribute.
We now continue with Rosa's story on Stand Up Speak Up, as she reflects on her brother who passed away, explains why she doesn't feel her life is a sad story, and now continues telling us about the fathers of the rest of her five children.
Okay, you have five kids. So two are from the older guy. The third is from...
They've all got different dads. The third one is from... my third child is from another male who was older. I was going through a court case and things and met up with him, and things did progress into a relationship and then a child, obviously. But through all of this, it's awful. I hate talking about this story. This particular gentleman, little to my knowledge, did I know until I was 6 months pregnant and in a court case and had CAS and everybody else involved. I found out through investigations of the court case that this man was somebody who had injured children that he had as babies. He had shook them up and damaged their fingers. And I don't know. It makes me sick. I can't talk about that. Sorry.
Yes. I understand.
He had to get out. He couldn't have anything to do to do with his child, although I did try to fight it for my child, and try to say that, you know, this child, despite what's gone on in his past, this child deserves, I think, to know his dad, or to know her dad. And I felt a bit torn with them situations, because it was like what you're trying to do best for your child, and then what you're trying to also do best for yourself at the same time. It's a very difficult situation to be in.
Yes, I can imagine.
And when you've got social services who are saying, look, you know, this happened X amount of years ago, but you've got to think of your child. And I'm like, do I allow this person in my child? Do I allow that? It's a very torn situation. So I did try to fight for that contact to happen with my child. However, he disappeared. I couldn't be in a relationship with him anymore myself. I couldn't stand him. It actually made me feel sick, and it still does, thinking about that.
So the fourth child
is from a relationship that I was very, very in love with. Person I was very in love with, yeah.
So this next one was kind of what you consider the love of your life that you had. Did you have baby four and five with him?
No, just
four.
One, two, yeah.
And
baby, yeah.
And you fell in love. Yeah. And what was it about him that you just...
Well, we both grew, it turns out actually we both grew up together. We went to school together. We used to, talk with each other at school, and he used to mix with my other siblings. And he was also himself going through childhood traumas. So we had an element of, you know, being able to talk with each other and communicate and understand each other as children. And then obviously I've moved out of the way of that town. And it was actually after I lost my brother, that's when I then moved back to where my love was.
Okay.
I moved back there. Three different reasons, thinking that I would find my brother there somewhere. That's really weird, I know, but that's kind of how I met back up with him.
So he had his own demons to deal with. So he was struggling with abuse in his upbringing as well. So it united you. But it also, I guess, it's hard to deal with somebody else's issues as well.
Yes, it was very, because we were both young as well. It was very, very difficult to, because I was actually going through the breakdown at this point unknowingly. So you can imagine it's very difficult for us to have been able to really come together properly, because he was drinking, I was drinking. So the relationship between us as a going out relationship and being in love relationship is very difficult and very challenging. And actually there was domestic violence in that relationship as well. And he wasn't very settled or grounded. He would come and go and come and go, and he would eventually later on down the line.
And then your next relationship, your fifth child, right?
Yeah. That was with somebody who was... I suppose it was kind of, although I'd spent a couple of years away from my love, getting over that, I kind of guess it was kind of with my baby boy's dad. It was more like kind of a rebound and me trying to discover my strengths at that point, in an unknowing process, I suppose. But he wasn't a very nice man either. He's very manipulative and very sneaky and sly and quite fiery. And he was quite angry. He was an angry person towards anybody, not just myself, but anybody's quite angry, and then towards my children. And it was from then I was just like, I get out, and I completely sort of ended that relationship.
I don't know. I just found it so fascinating and inspiring and sad. And there were so many emotions through the whole thing.
Yeah. It's a very deep story, and it's not one that is often, you know, I haven't shared it out with like crowds of people. It would be the next couple of people that I would have shared that with. It would be just very traumatizing. And I think that some people can listen to it, but I feel that some people would feel that it's something that they need to fix and take it on. So there's, you know, you don't need people like that. You want somebody who will listen to it and think, fucking hell, you know, this woman's been through some shit, but oh my God, look where she's doing, and if she can do that and be this person, it's like I want to be a shining example of the, you know, you can have the shittest time in life. You can actually be in the gutter. But the success of it is standing up and still, you know, having the courage and the strength and the love still, to still have love in your heart to carry on.
There's so many people that have no reason to get out of bed, and my heart breaks for them, because I've experienced deep depression before, and it's horrible. It's debilitating. It is the worst darkness. And I don't think people that don't have that have no idea what it feels like. It feels so hopeless.
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand that completely, when it's just, you can't, there's no point in facing the world. It's because they've allowed the darkness. And I've been guilty of it myself. You just allow the darkness to consume you. But then I feel, because I'm quite spiritual, I'm very, very highly spiritual. And, you know, I was very lucky in my younger years to have that brother who was able to, I could look up to him. And he was my light. Because I used to think, if he can do it, so can I.
You two have such a strong bond. I could hear it in your voice with Chris, and how you talked about him and how important he was. Because I think what's so interesting is that you grew up in both in a very abused environment, where the two of you almost had to be each other's friends, parents, siblings. Like, you had to be all roles to each other.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, so we were very lucky in the respect of that we had each other. So obviously, naturally, it was the case of that I'd always, you know, he was my strength to call me through. And I admire him every day, because when you become an adult and you look back and you think, oh my goodness me, now where did this boy go to lean on? He had nobody to kind of lean on, you know, as a child. But then you think, I used to lean on him and I looked up to him, and it was, it was through his courage, you know. And then he became a soldier himself for the world, and he used to take on the battles of the world on his shoulders, and he would never grumble, moan, he'd never complain about anything. He used to pull off jokes, and we're, you know, we are quite humorous people anyway, because it's the only way to get through sometimes. You just have to make a joke out of it. But we would be humorous together. So obviously, naturally, when I lost my brother, it was like I'd lost everybody, everything in one. And I've now coming out, you know, only before Christmas, actually. It's really strange, because I lost, my mother died before Christmas. My nan passed away as well before Christmas. And it seemed that when them two had passed away, not that my nan was any bad influence, my nan was a very positive influence, but you know, when my mother passed, it seemed that a lot of things then started coming into play. So, like, I'd met my real dad just before Christmas, like a couple of months after my mother had passed away. He's a bit of a dick, so I'm not even going to talk about him, as a waste of my breath. But I met a man that I wanted to meet, you know, just to see who the other half of me was. And then I met a brother, another brother, who I had absolutely no idea about, just before Christmas as well. So there's like a brother that I'd lost, who I grew up with, and, you know, from a child. And now there's another brother that I've just been reunited with, that I can grow old with. And I hope to be the same kind of inspiration for him as what my brother was for me.
You know, that's so inspiring and gives such purpose. You know, I mean, I'm so honored when I get the chance to help people tell their story, because I feel like storytelling is one of the most healing things out there. I mean, like, people hearing other people's stories, I don't think there's anything more powerful than that. There's no medicine. There's no greater than hearing a story and hearing someone that was able to push through so much sadness.
Yeah.
Because I say sadness for your story, because I think it's filled with so much sadness.
And yeah, it was as a child, it was very, it was the saddest parts of my life.
Yeah.
And obviously growing into an adult, you know, when you, because I was in the care system and things like that, you know, and then, so when you get dumped into the big wide world and you're just like, all of a sudden, what do I do with this? Because I've been so used to one way of things. you know, and they're being thrown in and having that social anxiety. And am I talking to people okay? Am I connecting with people? And you're constantly worried, and you're constantly, you know, got your guards up, and or you let them down, or you try and fix other people. And then, you know, there's so many life lessons that, you know, you learn. I can't even remember what we were saying. But yeah, sadness and things like that. But I don't look at it like it's a sadness. Now that I'm in my
30s, you're still so young.
It's a sadness. Yeah, it is young, but it's also with, that's what I'm saying to you. I've kind of hit a point where I think there is no point in keep looking at this as a sadness. I have to look at this like I am no victim to anybody. I am a survivor, and I feel blessed. And like I wrote on the statement, that actually, where people see success as being in very high jobs and earning millions of pounds with the fancy little Ferrari and their multi-million pound mansion house with their little puggy dogs and everything, that's how people see success. Now, myself, I look at my life, and anybody who is high up with the mansion and the cars and the dogs can look down at me all they like. That I don't see them as successful because they've got material. Because give them challenges that people like us face, they'd never be able to deal with that and cope. So I feel that actually going through what I've gone through isn't a sad story. It's actually a very successful story because I'm standing here today and being able to tell my story. That to me is a success.
Thanks for listening to Stand Up Speak Up. You can find links to Rose's designs in the show notes for this episode or at standupspeakupapparel.com. Now, here's Carla with some final thoughts to close out this episode.
The Rosie story is a really hard story for people to hear, and I can imagine the emotions as a listener that you went through. And I hope that nothing triggered anyone, because I cannot imagine what Rosie went through and her bravery and her courage to not only share it with us, but to be a survivor and to celebrate her as a survivor. You know, and I said this to Rosie, is that I don't know if any of you have ever read the book by V.C. Andrews on Flowers in the Attic, but it really reminded me of that story. Flowers in the Attic is about four kids whose mom puts them in an attic so that her new husband, their stepfather, doesn't know she has any children. And they are stuck in the attic and only given limited food, never see sunlight. What's a little bit different from Rosie's story, obviously, is that the two elder children fall in love and they raise the kids as their own when they eventually get to escape. But I think what's similar is that Rosie and her brother were so dependent on one another. And I don't think, and I think Rosie would agree with me, is that they couldn't have survived without each other. And the way she talks about her brother is that he was a lifeline. He was her best friend. And I think what hit me even harder is when I heard that he had passed away, you know, while he was in the army. And I just feel the whole thing is just, I don't know, like too much for any person. And when her brother passed away, that was when she had her breakdown. And it's surprising that she can have pushed through that. I mean, Rosie's a really interesting person. She's also a tarot card reader and has a really strong intuition. So she kind of works as a medium, and she really tries to get in touch with people's auras. And I think she does this. And I do find that a lot of the guests or a lot of the stories I hear are people that have gone through rough experiences, really want to help people. And I think that Rosie uses her talent and uses her skill, or I don't know what it's called, her intuition to help others and to bring joy to other people and to look always for the silver lining. And that if somebody's feeling really down, she can bring them out to bring them joy and happiness. And she is extremely kind. And she has a Facebook that is Tarot Card Reading. And we have her Facebook page, Stand Up, Speak Up. And she is such a great supporter in that group. And she's very, I mean, I just really want to do a shout out to our group, because there's so many people there that just are so amazing and inspiring and powerful. And I look at like Mary, I look at Rosie, I look at Bo, I look at Rob, I look at Linda, I look at Devin, I look at Erica. I mean, there's just so many. I look at Jill. There are just so many people that have been on our podcast and I've met along this incredible journey I'm so thankful I've had. And to see them getting to know each other and to see what Chris does, who moderates the Facebook group, is amazing. Chris is just very inspiring in himself and just so kind and good-hearted. And his girlfriend, Jody, also is a great contributor. I'm just really proud of the Facebook group. And it really touches my heart to see all these amazing guests that I get to continue my relationship with and see how they're doing. And Rosie, I definitely feel a connection with. So if you're interested in getting to know the podcast guests on a deeper level, I recommend you go to our Facebook group. Let them know what you think of their story. And I think that's about it.
The Stand Up Speak Up podcast is made in Canada. Produced and hosted by Carla Stevens Tolstoy. Co-production, editing, and narration by Joel at East Coast Radio Creative. Copyright 2018. Find us online at standupspeakupapparel.com. If you have a moment, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Thanks for listening to Stand Up Speak Up.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.